It is a pleasure to discuss and compare ideas with you. I look forward to many years of such rewarding discussions, Zelindani said. Then she looked around and motioned toward the sleeping rolls spread out on the floor. It appears you're getting ready for the trip.
I was just checking the sleeping roll to see if it needed mending. It's been a while since we've used it, Alice said. It's a good one for traveling in all kinds of weather.
The sleeping roll consisted of several hides sewn together to make a long top and bottom to accommodate Jandalar's height. They were attached at the foot, and removable thongs were threaded through holes down the sides that could be lashed tightly together or left loose, or even removed if it was especially warm. Thick furs were on the outside of the bottom piece to create an insulating cushion against the hard and often cold ground. Any of several furs could be used, but it was usually made from an animal killed in cold weather. On this one, Ayla had used the supremely dense, naturally insulating winter fur of reindeer. The top of the sleeping roll was lighter weight. She had used the summer hides of Megaseras, which were large and didn't require as much piecing together. An extra hide or fur could be thrown on top if it cooled down, or if it got really cold, additional furs could be put inside and the sides laced up.
I think you'll get some use out of that, Zelindani said, recognizing the versatility of the sleeping roll. I came to talk to you about the summer meeting, or rather about after the early ceremonial part of it. I was going to suggest that you make sure you have adequate traveling equipment and supplies with you. There are some sacred sites in this area you should see. Later, in a few years, I want to show you some of the sacred sites and take you to meet some of the Zelindania that live farther away.
Ayla smiled. She liked the idea of seeing new places, so long as it wasn't too far. She'd done enough long-distance traveling. She remembered just seeing Winnie and Gray, and an idea occurred to her that could make traveling with the first easier.
If we use the horses, we could travel much faster.
The woman shook her head and took a sip of tea.
There is no way I could get up on the back of a horse, Ayla.
You wouldn't have to. You can ride on the pole drag behind Winnie. We can make a comfortable seat on it.
She had been thinking of how to convert the travoy so that it could be used to carry passengers, especially Zelindani.
What makes you think that horse could pull someone my size on that dragging thing?
Winnie has pulled much heavier loads than you. She's a very strong animal. She could take you and your traveling things and medicines. In fact, I was going to ask if you would like her to carry your medicines along with mine to the summer meeting, Ayla said. We won't be taking passengers on the way there. We won't even be riding ourselves. We've promised several people that Winnie and Racer would carry certain things to the meeting. Joharan wanted us to haul some poles and other building parts for some of the Ninth Cave's summer dwellings, and Proliva wanted to know if we could take some of her special large cooking baskets and bowls and serving equipment for feasts and shared community meals. And Jandalar wants to lighten Marthona's load.
It appears that your horses are going to be put to good use, the first said, taking another sip of her tea, her mind already formulating plans.
The first had various journeys planned for Ayla. She wanted to take her to meet some of the Zelindanyi caves that were farther away and visit their sacred places, and perhaps meet some of the people who were neighbors of the Zelindanyi, who lived near the boundaries of their territory. But Zelindani had a feeling that the young woman, after coming so far to get here, might not be especially interested in making the extended trip she had in mind for her. She hadn't really mentioned anything about the Danyar tour that acolytes were expected to make. She began to think that perhaps
She ought to agree to allowing the horses to pull her on that thing. It might encourage Ayla to make the excursions. The large woman wasn't really interested in being dragged around by horses, and if she were honest with herself, she'd have to admit that the idea actually frightened her. But she had faced worse fears in her life. She knew the effect Ayla's control of the animals would have on people. They likely would be a little frightened and very impressed. Maybe one day she ought to see what it would be like to sit on this pole-drag thing.
"Perhaps sometime we'll try to see if your Winnie can pull me," Zelandani said, and watched a large grin expand across the young woman's face.
"This is as good a time as any," Ayla said, thinking it might be best to take advantage of the woman's agreeable mood before she changed her mind,
and watched the startled look appear on the face of the one who was first. Just then, the drape covering the entrance was pulled back, and Jandalar strode in. He could see Zelandani's startled expression and wondered what had brought it on. Ayla stood up, and they greeted each other with a light embrace and a touching of cheeks, but their strong feelings for each other were obvious and did not escape their visitor's attention. Jandalar glanced toward the baby's place and noticed that she was sleeping, and then he walked to the older woman and greeted her in a similar fashion, still wondering what had disconcerted her.
"And Jandalar can help us," Ayla added.
"Help you with what?"
he said.
"Zelandani was talking about making some trips this summer to visit other caves, and I thought it would be easier and faster using horses."
"It probably would, but do you think Zelandani could learn to ride?"
Jandalar asked.
"She wouldn't have to. We could make a comfortable seat on the pole drag for her, and Winnie could pull her," Ayla said.
Jandalar's forehead wrinkled as he thought about it. Then he nodded his head.
"I don't see why not," he said.
"Zelandani said sometime she'd be willing to try to see if Winnie could pull her, and I said, this is as good a time as any."
Zelandani glanced at Jandalar and detected a glint of enjoyment in his eyes, then looked at Ayla and tried to think of a way to put it off.
"You said you would have to make a seat. You don't have one made yet," she said.
"That's true, but you didn't think Winnie could pull you. You don't need a seat to try it and see if she can. I don't have any doubt, but it might reassure you and give us a chance to think about how to make a seat," Ayla said.
Zelandani felt that somehow she had been snared. She didn't really want to do this, especially not right away, but she didn't think she could get out of it now. Then, recognizing that in her eagerness to have Ayla begin her Danyar tour, she had done it to herself, she heaved a big sigh and stood up.
"Well, let's get it over with then," she said.
When she lived in her valley, Ayla had thought of a way to use her horse to transport things of considerable size and weight, such as an animal she had hunted, and once Jandalar, wounded and unconscious. It consisted of two poles attached together at the shoulders of the horse with a kind of strap made of thongs that went across Winnie's chest. The opposite ends of the poles spread out and rested on the ground behind the horse. Because only the very small surface area of the ends of the poles were dragged on the ground, it was relatively easy to pull them, even over rough terrain, especially for the sturdy horses. A platform made of planks or leather hides or basketry fibers was stretched across the poles to carry the loads, but Ayla wasn't sure if the flexible platform would hold the large woman without bending down to the ground.
"Finish your tea," Ayla said as the woman started to get up. "I need to find Folara, or someone to watch Janela. I don't want to wake her up."
She returned quickly, but not with Folara. Instead, Lenoga, Tremida's daughter, followed Ayla in, carrying her youngest sister, Lorela. Ayla had tried to assist Lenoga and the rest of the children almost since she arrived. She couldn't ever remember being so angry with anyone as she was with Tremita and Larimar because of the way they neglected their children. But there was nothing she could do about it, nothing anyone could do, except help the young ones.
"We won't be gone long, Lenoga. I should be back before Janela wakes up. We're just going to the horse shelter," Ayla said, then added, "There's some soup behind the fireplace with several good pieces of meat left and a few vegetables, if you or Lorela are hungry."
"Lorela might be. She hasn't eaten since I brought her to Stellona to nurse this morning," Lenoga said.
"You have something too, Lenoga," Ayla said as they were leaving.
She thought Stellona had probably given her something to eat, but was sure the girl hadn't eaten since the morning meal either. When they were some distance from the dwelling, and Ayla was sure she wouldn't be overheard, she finally voiced her anger.
"I'm going to have to go over there and check to see if there's any food for the children."
"You brought food over there 2 days ago," Jondalar said. "It shouldn't be all gone yet."
"You must know that Tremita and Larimar are eating it too," Zelandani said. "You can't prevent them. And if you bring grain or fruit or anything that will ferment, Larimar will take it and add it to the birch sap for his Barma. I'll stop by on the way back for the children and take them with me. I can find someone to give them an evening meal. You shouldn't be the only one feeding them, Ayla. There's enough people in the ninth cave to make sure those children get enough to eat." When they reached the horse shelter, Ayla and Jondalar gave Winnie and Gray some individual attention. Then, from the end of a post, Ayla got the special harness she used for the pole drag and led the mare outside. Jondalar wondered where Racer was and looked over the edge of the stone porch at the river to see if he could catch sight of him, but he didn't seem to be nearby. He started to whistle for him, then changed his mind. He didn't need the stallion now. He would look for him later, after they got Zelandani on the travois. Ayla looked around the horse shelter and noticed some planks that had been pried out of a log with wedges and a maul. She had planned to make additional feeding boxes for the horses with them, but then Janela was born, and they kept using ones she had made before, and she never got around to making more. Since they were kept under the overhanging ledge, protected from the worst of the weather, they seemed to be usable.
"Jondalar, I think we need to make a platform that won't bend so easily for Zelandani. Do you think we could fasten these planks across the poles to use as a base for a seat?" Ayla asked.
He looked at the poles and the planks, and then at the abundantly endowed woman, his forehead wrinkled in a familiar knot.
"It's a good idea, Ayla, but the poles are flexible, too. We can try it, but we may have to use sturdier ones."
There were always thongs or cords around the horse shelter. Jondalar and Ayla used some to fasten the planks across the poles. When they were done, the three of them stood back and looked at their handiwork.
"What do you think, Zelandani? The planks are slanting, but we can fix that later," Jondalar said. "Do you think you could sit on them?"
"I'll try, but it may be a little high for me." While they were working, the Danyer had become interested in the apparatus they were making and was curious herself to see how it would work. Jondalar had devised a halter for Winnie similar to the one he used for Racer, though Ayla seldom used it herself. She usually rode bareback with only a leather riding blanket, directing the animal with her position and the pressure of her legs, but for special circumstances, especially when other people were involved, it gave her an added measure of control. While Ayla put the halter on the mare, making sure Winnie was calm, Jondalar and Zelandani went to the reinforced travois behind the horse. The planks were a bit high, but Jondalar lent his strong arm and gave her a boost. The poles did bend under her weight, enough that her feet could touch the ground, but it gave her the feeling that she could get down easily enough. The slanting seat did feel somewhat precarious, but it wasn't as bad as she thought it would be.
"Are you ready?"
Ayla asked.
"I'm as ready as I'll ever be," Zelandani said.
Ayla started Winnie at a slow walk in the direction of downriver. Jandalar walked behind, smiling encouragingly at Zelandani. Then Ayla led the horse under the overhanging shelf and made a wide, complete turn until they were facing in the opposite direction and headed toward the east end of the front ledge, toward the dwellings.
"I think you should stop now, Ayla," the woman said.
Ayla stopped immediately.
"Are you uncomfortable?" she said.
"No, but didn't you say you wanted to make a real seat for me?"
"Yes."
"Then the first time you take me for everyone to see on this, I think it would be better to have the seat fixed up the way you want it, because you know people will be looking and appraising," the large woman said.
Ayla and Jandalar were taken aback for a moment. Then Jandalar said, "Yes, you're probably right."
In the next breath, Ayla said, "That means you would be willing to ride on the pole drag."
"Yes, I think I could become used to it. It's not like I couldn't get off any time I wanted to,"
the great Danyar said. Ayla wasn't the only one working on traveling gear. The entire cave had various items spread out in their dwellings or outside workplaces. They needed to make or repair sleeping rolls, traveling tents, and certain structural elements of the summer shelters, although most of the materials to make them would be gathered at the campsite. Those who had made objects as gifts or for trade, especially those who were proficient in certain crafts, had to make decisions regarding what and how much to bring. Those walking could carry only a limited amount with them, especially since they also had to carry food, both for immediate use and for gifts and special feasts, clothing and sleeping rolls and other necessities. Ayla and Jandalar had already decided to make new pole drags for Winnie and Racer. The ends of the poles that dragged on the ground were the part that wore down first, especially when dragging heavy loads. After several people had made requests, they had offered the additional carrying power of the horses to family and close friends, but even the sturdy horses could take only so much. From the beginning of spring, the cave had hunted meat and collected plants, berries, fruits, nuts, mushrooms, edible stems, leaves, and roots of vegetables, wild grains, even lichen and the inner bark of certain trees. Though they would bring a small amount of fresh food recently hunted or foraged, most of their food was dried. Drying preserved food for a long time, and it weighed less, allowing them to carry more to eat while traveling, and after they arrived until hunting and gathering patterns could be established at the location of the current year's summer meeting. The site of the annual gathering changed every year in a regular cycle of suitable places. There were only certain areas that could accommodate a summer meeting, and any area could only be used for one season and then had to rest for several years before it could be used again. With so many people congregated in one place, somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people, by the end of the summer they would have used up all the resources for some distance around, and the earth needed to recover. The year before they had followed the river north about 25 miles. This year they would be traveling west until they reached another waterway, West River, that ran generally parallel to the river. Joharan and Proliva were inside their dwelling, finishing a midday meal along with Soliban and Rushamar. Ramara, Soliban's mate, and her son Robinan had just left with Jeridol, Proliva's son, both of whom could count 6 years. Sathona, her baby daughter, had fallen asleep in Proliva's arms, and she had just stood up to put her down. When they heard a tapping on the hard rawhide panel beside the entrance, Proliva thought that Ramara had probably forgotten something and returned, and was surprised when a much younger woman entered at her call to come into the dwelling.
"Galea,"
Proleva said, rather surprised, though Galea had been friends with Joharan's sister Falara almost from birth and often came to their dwelling with her friend. She seldom came alone. Joharan looked up.
"Are you back already?"
he said, then turned to the others.
"Since she's such a fast runner, I sent Galea to the third cave earlier this morning to find out when Manvalar plans to leave."
"When I got there, he was just going to send a runner to you,"
Galea said. She was a little out of breath, and her hair was wet from the sweat of her effort.
"Manvalar said the third cave is ready to leave. He wants to start tomorrow morning. If the ninth cave is ready to go, he would like to travel with us."
"That's a little sooner than I had planned. I was thinking of leaving in the next day or so,"
Joharan said, his frown line showing. He looked at the others.
"Do you think we can be ready to go by tomorrow morning?"
"I can,"
Proleva said without hesitation.
"We probably can," Rushamar said. "Salova has finished the last of the baskets she wanted to take with her. We haven't packed, but I have everything ready."
"I'm still sorting through my handles," Soliban said. "Marcheval came by yesterday to talk about what he should bring. He seems to have a talent for working with ivory, too, and is gaining skill," he added with a smile. Soliban's craft was making handles, mostly for knives, chisels, and other tools. Though he could make handles out of antler and wood, he particularly liked working with mammoth tusk ivory and had begun making other objects from it, like beads and carvings, especially since Marcheval had become his apprentice.
"Can you be ready to leave by tomorrow morning?"
Joharan asked. He knew Soliban often agonized to the last moment over the decision of which handles to bring with him to the summer meeting, for gifts and for trading.
"I suppose I can," Soliban said. Then, coming to a decision, "Yes, I'll be ready, and I'm sure Ramara can be too." "Good, but we need to find out about the rest of the cave so I can send a runner back to Manvalar. Rushamar, Soliban, we need to tell everyone that I'd like to have a short meeting as soon as possible. You can say what it's about if anyone asks, and tell them that whoever comes to represent each hearth should be able to decide for the rest," he said. He dumped the last remnants left in his personal eating bowl into the fire, then wiped it and his eating knife with a damp piece of buckskin before putting them into a carrying pouch attached to his belt. He'd run them under water when he had a chance. As he got up, he said to Galea, "I don't think you need to run back there again. I'll send another runner."
She looked rather relieved, then smiled.
"Paladar runs fast. We were racing with each other yesterday, and he almost beat me."
Joharan had to stop and think a moment. The name wasn't immediately familiar to him. Then he remembered the lion hunt. Galea had hunted with a young man from the third cave, but Paladar had also been with him on the hunt.
"Isn't he a friend of Tavonin? The young man Willemar has been taking with him on trading missions."
"Yes, he came back with Willemar and Tavonin last time and decided he might as well go with us to the summer meeting and meet his cave there,"
Galea said. Joharan nodded. It was acknowledgement enough. He didn't know if he would send the visitor or someone else who was a member of the ninth cave, but he was aware that Paladar seemed to be of interest to Falara's friend Galea, and obviously the young man had found a reason for staying. If there was a possibility that he might someday become a member of the ninth cave, Joharan wanted to know more about him and tucked the thought away in his memory. He had more pressing issues to think about at the moment. Joharan knew that at least one person from each dwelling would be present at his meeting, but as people started coming out, he saw that nearly everyone wanted to find out why the leader was calling a sudden meeting. When they had gathered in the work area, Joharan stepped up on the large flat stone that had been placed there so that he, or anyone who had something to say, could be seen more easily.
I spoke with Manvalar not long ago,
Joharan began without preamble.
As you know, the site of the summer meeting this year is the big field near West River and a tributary near the 26th cave. Manvalar's mate was from the 26th cave, and when her children were young, they used to visit often to see her mother and family. I know how to get there by going south to Big River, then west to another river that joins with West River, and then following it north to the summer meeting place. But Manvalar knows a more direct way, starting out at Wood River and going west from here. We'd get there more quickly, and I had hoped we could travel with the third cave, but they are leaving tomorrow morning.
There was a murmuring from the gathered assembly, but before anyone could speak out, Joharan continued,
I know you like to have a few days' warning before we leave, and I usually try to do that, but I'm sure most of you are nearly ready to go. If you can pack and be ready by morning, we can travel with the third cave and get there much faster. The sooner we get there, the better our chances will be of finding a good place to set up our camp.
The crowd broke out in conversation, and Joharan heard various comments and questions.
I don't know if we can be ready by then.
I need to talk to my mate.
We aren't packed yet.
Won't he wait another day or so?
The leader let it go on for a few moments, then he spoke again.
I don't think it's fair to ask the third cave to wait for us. They want to find a good place, too. I need an answer now, so I can send a runner back to him,
he said.
One person from each hearth must make the decision. If most of you think you can be ready, we'll leave in the morning. Those who want to go then, come and stand to my right.
There was an initial hesitation. Then Soliban and Rushamar walked up and stood on Joharan's right. Jandalar looked at Ayla, who smiled and nodded. Then he moved to stand beside them on his brother's right. Marthona did the same. Then a few more came up and joined them. No one moved to his left side, which would have indicated an unwillingness to leave so soon, but several were hanging back. Ayla was using the counting words as each person joined the group, saying the word under her breath and tapping a finger on her thigh at the same time.
19, 20, 21? How many hearths are there?
She wondered. When she reached 30, it was obvious that most of the people had decided they could be ready by the following morning. The idea of getting there faster and finding a more desirable location was a powerful incentive. After 5 more people joined them, she tried to count the hearths left. There were quite a few still undecided people milling around, but she thought they represented only 7 or 8 hearths.
What about those who are not ready by then?
A voice from the undecided spoke out.
They can come along later, on their own,
Joharan said.
But we always go as a cave. I don't want to go alone, a person said.
Joharan smiled.
Then make sure you're ready by morning. As you can see, most people have decided they can leave then. I'm sending a runner to Manvalar to tell him we'll be ready to join the third cave tomorrow morning.
With a cave the size of the 9th, there were always a few who couldn't make the trip, at least not then, people who were sick or injured, for example. Joharan assigned a few people to stay with them to hunt and help take care of those left behind. The helpers would be replaced after about a half a moon, so they wouldn't miss out on the entire summer meeting. The people of the 9th cave were up much later than usual, and in the morning when everyone started gathering, a few were obviously tired and grumpy. Manvalar and the 3rd cave had arrived fairly early and were waiting in the open area that was just beyond the dwellings, towards downriver, not far from the place where Ayla and Jandalar lived. Marthona, Willemar, and Falara were ready early and had come to their dwelling so some of their things could be packed on the horses or the travois. They also brought some food for a morning meal to share with Manvalar and a few others.
The evening before, Marthona had suggested to her sons that it might be appropriate for her and Jandalar to entertain Manvalar and his family at Ayla's dwelling, so called since Jandalar had made it for her, and therefore allow Joharan and Proliva to get the rest of the cave organized for the trek across country to Sunview, the home of the 26th cave of the Zelandanyi, the place of the summer meeting. Chapter 5. It was a large group, nearly 250 people, that started out later that morning, most of the 9th and 3rd caves. Manvalar and the 3rd cave took the lead, heading down the slope from the eastern end of the stone shelter. Unlike the vegetation of Grass River Valley near the 3rd cave where they found the lions, the path from the northeastern edge of the stone porch of the 9th cave led down to a small tributary of the river, called Wood River, because its protected valley was unusually rich with trees. Wooded areas were rare during the Ice Age. The edge of the glaciers that covered a quarter of the Earth's surface were not very far to the north and created conditions of permafrost in the nearby paraglacial regions. In the summer, the top layer melted to various depths depending on conditions. In cool, shaded areas with heavy moss or other insulative vegetation, the ground melted only a few inches, but where the land was exposed to direct sunlight, it softened more, enough to allow an abundant grass cover. For the most part, conditions did not favor the growth of trees with their deeper root systems, except in certain locations, in places that were protected from the coldest winds and the hardest frosts. Several feet of topsoil might be thawed, enough for trees to take root. Gallery forests often sprung up alongside the water-saturated edges of rivers. Wood River Valley was one of those exceptions. It had a relative abundance of both coniferous and deciduous trees and brush, including varieties of fruit and nut trees. It was an amazingly rich resource that provided a wealth of materials, especially firewood, for those who lived near enough to benefit. But it wasn't a dense forest. It was more like a narrow valley parkland with open clearings of meadows and lovely glades between heavier wooded patches. The large band traveled northwest through Wood River Valley for about 6 miles of gentle upgrade, a very pleasant beginning of the trek. At a tributary that cascaded down a hillside on the left, Manvalar stopped. It was time for a rest and to let some of the stragglers catch up. Most people built small fires to make tea. Parents fed children and snacked on traveling food, dried strips of meat or pieces of fruit or nuts saved from the previous year's harvest. A few ate some of the special traveling cakes that nearly everyone had, a mixture of dried meat ground fine, dried berries or small chunks of other fruit, and fat, shaped into patties or cakes and wrapped in edible leaves. They were filling, high-energy food, but they took some effort to prepare, and most people saved them for later when they wanted to cover long distances quickly or were stalking game and didn't want to start a fire.
"This is where we turn," Manvalar said. "From now on, if we just continue due west, when we reach West River, we should be close to the 26th cave and the floodplain, which is where the summer meeting will be held."
He was sitting with Joharan and several others. They looked at the hills rising up on the west bank and the tumultuous tributary tumbling down the slope.
"Should we camp here tonight?"
Joharan asked, then looked up at the sun to check its path across the sky.
"It's a little early, but we got off to a late start this morning, and that looks like a hard climb. We might be able to handle it better after a good night's rest."
He feared it might be hard for some.
"Only for the next few miles. Then it levels out on higher ground, more or less," Manvalar said. "I usually try to make the climb first, then stop and set up camp for the night."
"You're probably right," Joharan said. "It's better to have this behind us and start out fresh in the morning, but some people may find this climb more difficult than others."
He looked hard at his brother, then flicked his eyes toward their mother, who had just arrived and seemed grateful to sit and rest. He had noticed that she seemed to be having a harder time than usual. Jandalar caught the silent signal and turned toward Ayla.
"Why don't we stay back and bring up the rear and direct any stragglers who may have fallen behind?"
He motioned toward a few others who were still coming.
"Yes, that's a good idea. The horses would rather be behind everyone anyway,"
she said, lifting Janela up and patting her back. She had finished nursing, but seemed to want to play around at her mother's breast. She was awake and lively, and giggled at Wolf, who happened to be behind them. He reached out and licked her face, and the milk dribbling down her chin, which made her giggle more. Ayla, too, had seen the signal pass between Joharan and Jandalar, and like Joharan, she had noticed that Marthona seemed to be slowing as the day progressed. She had noticed that Zelindani, who had just arrived, had been falling back also, but she wasn't sure if it was because she was tiring or if she was slowing down to keep pace with Marthona.
"Is there some hot water to make tea?"
Zelindani said when she reached them, pulling out the pouch in which she kept her medicines and bustling around, preparing to make her tea.
"Have you had any tea yet, Marthona?"
Even before the woman shook her head from side to side to indicate that she hadn't, the Danyer continued,
"I'll make some for you along with mine."
Ayla watched them both closely and quickly realized that Zelindani had also noticed that Marthona seemed to be having some difficulty with the hike and was preparing some medicinal tea for her. Marthona knew it too. Many people seemed to be concerned for the woman, but they were keeping it at a subtle undercurrent. Ayla could tell, however, that no matter how they tried to minimize it, they were genuinely worried. She decided to see what Zelindani was doing.
"Jandalar, will you take Janela? She's fed and wide awake and wants to play,"
Ayla said, giving the baby to him. Janela waved her arms and smiled at him, and Jandalar smiled back as he took her. It was obvious that he adored this baby girl, this child of his hearth. He never seemed to mind taking care of her. To Ayla, he seemed more patient with her than she was. Jandalar himself was a little surprised at the strength of his feeling for her, and wondered if it was because, for a time, he had doubted that there would ever be a child of his hearth. He feared he had offended the great Earth Mother when he was young by wanting to mate with his Danyi woman, and wasn't sure she would ever choose a piece of his spirit to mix with the spirit of a woman to create a new life. That was what he had been taught. The creation of life was caused by the spirits of women mingling with the spirits of men with the help of the mother. And most people he knew, including those he had met on his journey, believed essentially the same thing, except for Ayla. She had a different view of the way new life came to be. She was convinced that there was more to it than just the mixing of spirits. She had told him that it wasn't only his spirit that had combined with hers to create this new person, but his essence when they shared pleasures. She said Janela was as much his child as hers, and he wanted to believe her. He wanted this child to be as much his as hers, but he didn't know. He knew Ayla had come to that belief when she lived with the clan, though it wasn't what they believed either. She had told him that they thought it was totem spirits that caused a new life to start growing inside a woman, something about the male totem overpowering the female totem spirit. Ayla was the only one he knew who thought that a new life was begun by something more than spirits. But Ayla was an acolyte, training to become a Zelindani, and it was the Zelindania that explained Dani, the great Earth Mother, to her children. It made him wonder what would happen when the time came for her to explain how new life began to the people. Would she say that the mother chose the spirit of a particular man to combine with her spirit, the way the other Zelindania did,
Or would she insist that it was a man's essence? And what would the Zelandania have to say about it?
When Ayla approached the two women, she noticed Zelandani looking through her bag of medicinal herbs and Marthona sitting on a log in the shade of a tree near Wood River. Jondalar's mother did look tired, though it seemed to Ayla that she was trying not to make an issue of it. She was smiling and chatting with some people nearby, but she looked as if she would rather just close her eyes and rest. After she greeted Marthona and the others, Ayla joined the one who was first.
"Do you have everything you need?"
she asked quietly.
"Yes, though I wish I had time to prepare a fresh foxglove mixture properly, but I'll have to use the dried preparation I have,"
the woman said. Ayla noticed that Marthona's legs seemed a little swollen.
"She needs to rest, doesn't she? Not visit with those people who just want to be sociable,"
Ayla said.
"I'm not as good as you at letting people know they should let her be for a while, without embarrassing her. I don't think she wants people to know how tired she feels. Why don't you tell me how to make the tea for her?"
Zelandani smiled and said almost inaudibly,
"That was perceptive of you, Ayla. They are friends from the third cave, who she hasn't seen recently."
Then she quickly explained how to make the infusion she wanted and approached the chatting friends. Ayla was concentrating on the instructions she had been given, and when she looked up, she saw that Zelandani was walking away with Marthona's friends, and Marthona had closed her eyes. Ayla nodded to herself.
"That will discourage others from stopping to talk," she thought.
She waited a while to let the hot drink cool, and just as she was bringing it to Marthona, Zelandani returned. They both hovered around the former leader of the Ninth Cave, making a point of showing their backs while she sipped her tea, blocking the view of passers-by. Whatever was in Zelandani's mixture, after a while it seemed to help, and Ayla thought that she would ask the Danyar about it later. When Manvalar started out again, leading the way up the incline, Zelandani followed, but Ayla stayed seated beside Marthona. Willemar had joined them and was seated on the other side of his mate.
"Why don't you wait with us and let Folara go ahead?" she said. "Jondalar has volunteered to stay until the last, to make sure everyone gets started in the right direction. Proliva has promised to save something for us to eat whenever we get to the camp."
"I will," Willemar said without hesitation. "Manvalar said from here it's straight west for the next few days. How many days? Depends on how fast someone wants to go. No one has to be in a hurry. But it's good if someone follows along at the end, just to make sure no one is delayed because they got hurt or ran into some other problem."
"Or has to wait for a slow old woman," Marthona said. "There may come a time when I won't be going to summer meetings."
"That's true for all of us," Willemar said. "But not yet, Marthona." "He's right," Jondalar said, holding a sleeping baby in one arm.
He had just arrived after talking to a family group with several young children, making sure they got started in the right direction. The wolf was following behind, keeping watch on Janela.
"It doesn't matter if we take a little longer to get there. We won't be the only ones."
He motioned toward the family starting the climb.
"Once we get there, people will still be wanting your counsel and advice, Mother."
"Do you want me to take Janela in my carrying blanket, Jondalar?"
Ayla said.
"We seem to be the last ones."
"I'm fine with her, and she seems comfortable. She's sound asleep. But we have to find an easy way for the horses to get to the top of that waterfall," he said.
"I'm looking for the same thing, an easy way. Perhaps I should follow your horses," Marthona said, not entirely in jest. "It's not so much the horses. They are good climbers. It's getting up there with the heavy pole drags and the loads on their backs," Ayla said.
I think we need to traverse our way up, making wide turns to allow for the poles they are dragging behind them.
So you want an easy way, with a gentle slope,
Willemar said.
As Marthona said, that's what we want. If I'm not mistaken, I think we passed a gentler slope on our way here. Ayla, why don't we walk back a ways and see if we can find it?
Since Jondalar is so comfortable holding the baby, he can stay and keep me company, Marthona added.
And watch out for her, Ayla thought, as she and Willemar started out. I don't like the idea of her waiting alone. There are many animals that might wander by and think of her as fair game. Lions, bears, hyenas, who knows what? Wolf, who had been resting on the ground with his head between his paws, got up and seemed uneasy when he saw that John Ayla was staying. But Ayla was getting ready to leave.
Wolf, stay, she said, signaling the same thing to him. Stay with Jondalar and John Ayla and Marthona.
The wolf lowered himself back down, but his head was up and his ears cocked forward, alert to any other words or signals from her as she walked away with Willemar.
If we hadn't loaded the horses so heavily, Marthona could ride up that hill on a pole drag,
Ayla commented after a while.
Only if she were willing, Willemar said. I've noticed something interesting since you came with your animals. She has absolutely no fear of that wolf, who is a powerful hunter that could easily kill her if he chose. But the horses are another matter. She doesn't like to get too close to them. She hunted horses when she was younger, but she fears them much more than the wolf, and they only eat grass.
Perhaps it's because she doesn't know them as well. They are bigger and can be skittish when they are nervous or if something startles them, Ayla said. Horses don't come into the dwelling. Maybe if she spent more time with them, she wouldn't be so anxious about them.
Maybe. But first you'd have to persuade her. And if she gets it in her mind that she doesn't want to, she's very good at evading what you want and doing what she wants without seeming to. She's a very strong-minded woman.
Of that, I have no doubt, Ayla said.
Though they weren't gone very long, by the time Ayla and Willemar returned, John Ayla had awakened and was now being held by her grandam. Jondalar was with the horses, checking their loads, making sure everything was securely fastened.
We found a better place to climb that ridge. In some places, it's a little steep, but it is climbable, Willemar said.
I'd better get John Ayla,
the young woman said, heading toward Marthona.
She's probably made a mess and doesn't smell too good. She usually does when she wakes in the afternoon.
She did, Marthona said, holding the baby so that she was sitting on her lap facing her.
I haven't forgotten how to take care of a baby, have I, John Ayla?
She bounced the infant lightly and smiled at her, and saw her smile returned along with some soft cooing sounds.
She is such a sweet little thing,
she added, giving up the child to her mother. Ayla couldn't help smiling at her daughter when she picked her up, and saw the smile returned as she arranged her baby in her carrying blanket, tying it securely. Marthona seemed rested and more lively when she stood up, which pleased her. They headed back along Wood River and around a bend, then started up the easier slope. When they reached the top, they went north again until they reached the small stream that had been spilling down to the river below, then proceeded west. The sun was shining almost directly in their eyes as it neared the horizon before they reached the camp that had been set up by the third and ninth caves. Proliva had been watching out for them and was relieved to see them when they finally arrived.
I kept some food warm by the fire. What took you so long?
She said, leading them to the traveling tent they were sharing. She seemed particularly solicitous of Joharan's mother. We walked back along Wood River and found a slope that was easier for the horses to climb, so it was easier for me, too, Marthona said. I didn't think that the horses would have difficulties. Ayla said they were strong and could carry the loads, Proliva said. It wasn't the size of the loads. It was those pole things trailing behind them, Marthona said.
That's right, Jondalar said. The horses need a wider, easier path up a steep hill. They can't turn as sharply when they're pulling the pole drags. We found a way up that allowed them to traverse their way up the hill, but we had to backtrack a ways down Wood River.
Well, it's nearly level and open for the rest of the way, Manvalar said. He and Joharan had just joined them and had heard Jondalar's comments.
That will make it easier for everybody. Keep the food warm for us, Proliva. We have to unload the horses and find a good place for them to graze, Jondalar said.
If you have a nice bone with some meat left on for Wolf, I'm sure he'd appreciate it, Ayla added.
It was dark when they returned from settling the horses and were finally able to have their meal. Everyone using their family traveling shelter was gathered around the fire, Marthona and Willemar and Falara, Joharan and Proliva and her two children, Jeradol and Sathona, Jondalar, Ayla and Jonayla, and Wolf and Zelandani. Although she wasn't technically part of the family, she didn't have any other family in the Ninth Cave and usually stayed with the leader's family when they traveled.
How long until we reach the summer meeting, Joharan? Ayla asked.
It depends how fast we go, but Manvalar said probably no more than 3 or 4 days.
It rained off and on most of the way, and everyone was glad when by the afternoon of the third day they saw some tents ahead. Joharan and Manvalar and Joharan's two close aides, Rushamar and Soliban, hurried ahead to find a place to set up their camps. Manvalar chose a place along a tributary near its confluence with West River and claimed it with his backpack. Then he found the leader of Sunview, and they all went through a short form of the formalized greeting.
In the name of Donny, I greet you, Stevedal, leader of Sunview, the 26th cave of the Zelandanyi.
Joharan finished.
You are welcome to the gather field of the 26th cave, Joharan, leader of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi, Stevedal said, letting go of his hands.
We are glad to be here. But I'd like to ask your advice about where to set up our camp. You know how big we are, and now that my brother has returned from his journey with some rather unusual companions, we need to find a place where they won't disturb neighbors and won't feel too crowded by people they don't know yet.
I saw the wolf and two horses last year. They are rather unusual companions, Stevedal said, grinning. They even have names, don't they?
The mare is Whinny. That's the horse Ayla usually rides. Jondalar calls the stallion he rides Racer. The mare is his dam. But it's three horses now. The Great Mother saw fit to bless the mare with another young one, a little female. They call her Gray for the color of her coat.
You may end up with a whole herd of horses at your cave, Stevedal said.
I hope not, Joharan thought, but he didn't say anything, just smiled.
What kind of place are you looking for, Joharan?
You remember last year we found a place somewhat out of the way. At first I thought it might be too far away from all the activities, but it turned out to be just right. There was a place for the horses to graze and for the wolf to be away from the people of the other caves. Ayla controls him perfectly. He even pays attention to what I say sometimes. But I wouldn't want him frightening anyone, and most of us liked that we were able to spread out a bit.
As I recall, you also had plenty of firewood right to the end of the season, Stevedal said. We even came and got some the last few days.
Yes, we were fortunate. We weren't even looking for that. Manvalar told me he thought there might be a place for us a little closer to your sun view, a little valley with some grass.
Yes, we sometimes have small gathers there with nearby caves. Hazelnut grows there and blueberries,
Stevedal said.
It's actually not far from a sacred cave. It's a little distance from here, but it might work for you. Why don't you come and take a look at it?
Joharan beckoned to Soliban and Rushamar, and they followed after him and Stevedal.
Dalinar and his Lanzadanyi stayed with you last year, didn't they? Are they coming this year?
Stevedal asked as they walked.
We haven't heard. He didn't send us a runner, so I rather doubt it,
Joharan said. Some members of the Ninth Cave, who had planned to stay with other kin or friends, left the group to find them. Zelandani went to find the large special dwelling that was always set up for the Zelandania, right in the middle of everything. The rest waited just beyond the field where most of the caves had gathered for the summer meeting, greeting many friends who came to see them. While they waited, the rain began to let up. When Joharan returned, he went to the waiting group.
With Stevedal's help, I think I've found a place for us, he said. Like last year, it's a little distance away from the main meeting place, but it should work.
How far is it?
Willemar asked. He was thinking of Marthona. The trek to the meeting had not been easy on her.
You can see it from here if you know where to look.
Well, let's go look at it, Marthona said.
A group of more than 150 trailed along after Joharan. By the time they reached the place, the rain had stopped and the sun broke through, highlighting a pleasant little blind valley with room enough for all of those who were staying together with the Ninth Cave, at least for the beginning of the summer meeting. After the first ceremonies that marked the initial coming together, the peripatetic summer life of foraging, exploring, and visiting would begin. Zelandanyi territory was much larger than the immediate region. The number of people who identified themselves as Zelandanyi had grown so large, their territory had had to expand to accommodate them. There were other Zelandanyi summer meetings, and some individuals or families or caves did not go to summer meetings with the same people every year. Sometimes they went to meetings that were farther away, especially if they had goods to trade or distant kin. It was a way of maintaining contact, and some summer meetings were held jointly between Zelandanyi and neighboring people who lived near the ill-defined boundary of their territory. Because they were such a large and prosperous people, in comparison to the other groups, the name Zelandanyi carried a certain prestige, a cachet that others wanted to be associated with. Even those who did not think of themselves as Zelandanyi liked to claim a relationship with them in their names and ties. But although their population was large in relation to other people, in reality it was insignificant in terms of their actual numbers and the territory they occupied. People were in the minority among the inhabitants of that cold ancient land. Animals were far more numerous and diversified. The list of different kinds of living creatures was long. While some of them, such as roe deer or moose, lived singly or in small family groups in the few scattered woodlands or forests, most of them were dwellers of open grasslands, steppes, plains, meadows, parklands, and their numbers were huge. At certain times of the year, in regions not all that distant from each other, herds of mammoths, megaseras, and horses gathered together in the hundreds, bison, aurochs, and reindeer in the thousands. Migrating birds could darken the sky for days. There were few disputes between the Zelandanyi and their neighbors, partly because there was so much land and so few people, but also because their survival depended on it. If a living site became too crowded, a small group might splinter off, but they only went as far as the nearest available desirable location. Few wanted to move very far from family or friends, not only because of ties of affection, but in times of adversity they wanted and needed to be close to those they could rely on for help. Where the land was rich and able to support them, people tended to cluster together in rather large numbers, but there were sizable tracts of land that were totally unoccupied by people, except for an occasional hunting foray or gathering expedition. The world during the Ice Age, with its glittering glaciers, transparently clear rivers, thundering waterfalls, hordes of animals in vast grasslands, was dramatically beautiful, but brutally harsh. And the few people who lived then recognized at a fundamental level the necessity of keeping strong affiliations. You helped someone today because you would likely need help tomorrow. It was why customs, conventions, mores, and traditions had developed that sought to diminish interpersonal hostility, ease resentments, and keep emotions in check. Jealousy was discouraged, and vengeance dealt with by the society, with retribution meted out by the community that would give the injured parties satisfaction and ease their pain or anger, but that still would be fair to all concerned. Selfishness, cheating, and failing to assist someone in need were considered crimes, and the society found ways to punish such criminals, but penalties were often subtle and inventive. The people of the Ninth Cave quickly decided on the individual locations for their summer lodges and began to construct semi-permanent dwellings. They had been rained on enough and wanted a place where they could be dry. Most of the poles and stakes that were the major structural elements had been brought with them, carefully selected from their nearby wooded valley, cut and trimmed before they left. Many had been used for the traveling tents. They also had smaller, lighter-weight portable shelters that were easier to carry for overnight hunts or other treks. The summer lodges were all made in generally the same way. They were round, with room around the center pole, so that several people could stand, with a thatched roof that slanted down toward the vertical outer walls, where the sleeping rolls were laid out. The top of the tall central pole of the traveling tent had been shaped into a long, tapering diagonal. It was made longer by attaching another pole with a similar tapering diagonal on the bottom, facing the other way. They were held together with a sturdy rope wrapped round and round and pulled tight. Another length of rope was used to mark off the distance from the central pole to the circular outer wall, and using that as a guide, they erected an enclosure of upright supports using the same posts that had been used for the tent, plus some additional ones. Panels made of woven cattail leaves or reeds or rawhide or other materials, some brought with them and some made on the spot, were fastened to both the outside and the inside of the posts, creating a double wall with air in between for insulation. The ground cloth only went a short distance up the inside wall, but it was enough to keep out drafts. Any moisture that condensed in the cool of the evenings would form on the inside of the outer wall, leaving the inside of the inner wall dry. The roof of the shelter was made of thin poles of young fir or small-leaved deciduous trees like willow or birch, which were placed from the central pole to the outer wall. Branches and sticks were fastened between them, and a rough thatch of grasses and reeds was added on top, making a waterproof ceiling. Since it only had to last for a season, most people didn't make the thatch particularly thick, and it was usually made only well enough to keep out rain and wind. Before the end of summer, however, most roofs had to be patched more than once. By the time most of the structures were finished and everything brought in and arranged, it was late afternoon and would be dark soon, but it didn't deter people from heading for the main camp to see who was there and greet friends and relatives. Ayla and Jondalar still had to make provisions for the horses. Remembering the year before, they fenced in an area somewhat away from the camp with support posts, some brought with them, some found. They used anything that would work, sometimes whole young trees which they dug up and replanted. Cross pieces might be wood or branches or even rope, mostly collected nearby. It wasn't that the horses couldn't have jumped over or broken out of the enclosure. It was more to define their space, both for them and for curious visitors. Ayla and Jandalar were among the last to leave the camp of the Ninth Cave. When they finally started toward the main summer camp, they passed by 11-year Lenoga and her 13-year brother, Bolagan, struggling to make a small summer lodge at the edge of the camp. Since no one wanted to share a dwelling with Larimar, Tremita, and their children, it only needed to house their family, but Ayla noticed that neither parent was there helping the children.
"Lenoga, where is your mother, or Larimar?" Ayla asked. "I don't know. At the summer meeting, I suppose." "Do you mean they've left you to make your summer lodge by yourselves?"
Chapter 6 Ayla was appalled. The four younger children were standing around staring with eyes wide open. She thought they looked frightened.
"How long has this been going on?" Jandalar asked. "Who built your lodge last year?"
"Mostly Larimar and me,"
Bolagan said, "with a couple of his friends, after he promised them some Barma."
"Why isn't he building it now?"
Jandalar said. Bolagan shrugged. Ayla looked at Lenoga.
"Larimar got into a fight with Mother and said he was going to stay in one of the falages with the men. He took his things and left. Mother chased after him, but she hasn't come back,"
Lenoga said. Ayla and Jandalar looked at each other, and without saying a word, they nodded. Ayla put Janayla down on her carrying blanket. Then they both started working with the children. Jandalar soon realized that they were using the poles from their traveling tent, which would not be enough to build a lodge. But they couldn't put up the tent because the wet leather hide was disintegrating and the damp floor mats were falling apart. They had to make everything, wall panels, floor mats, and thatch for the roof, with materials found locally. Jandalar started by looking for poles. He found a couple near their lodge, then cut down some trees. Lenoga had never seen anyone weave mats and panels quite the way Ayla did, or as fast. But the girl learned quickly when Ayla showed her. The 9-year girl, Trilara, and 7-year boy, Lavagan, tried to help as well after they were given some instruction, but they were more occupied with helping Lenoga with 1.5-year Lorela and her 3-year brother, Ganimar. Though he didn't say anything, Bolagan noticed as they worked that Jandalar's techniques created a dwelling of a much sturdier construction than he had made before. Ayla stopped to nurse Janayla and nursed Lorela, too, then got some food for the children from their lodge, since apparently the parents hadn't brought any. They had to build a couple of fires to see what they were doing to finish the work. By the time they were nearly through, people were coming back from the main camp. Ayla had gone back to their dwelling for a covering for Janayla since it was getting chilly. She had just put her baby down in their new summer lodge when she saw people approaching. Proliva, with Sathona on her hip, was walking with Marthona and Willemar, who was carrying a torch in one hand and guiding Jaradol with the other.
"Where did you go, Ayla? I didn't see you at the main camp," Proliva said. "We never got there," Ayla said. "We've been helping Bolagan and Lenoga build their lodge."
"Bolagan and Lenoga?" Marthona said. "What happened to Larimar and Tremita?"
"Lenoga said they got into a fight. Larimar decided to go to a falage, took his things and left, and Tremita chased after him and didn't come back," Ayla said.
It was obvious that she was having some trouble controlling her anger.
"Those children were trying to build a lodge by themselves with nothing but tent posts and wet floor mats. They didn't have any food either. I nursed Lorela a little, but if you have any milk, Proliva, she could probably use some more."
"Where is their lodge?"
Willemar said. "At the edge of the camp, near the horses," Ayla said.
"I'll watch the children, Proliva," Marthona said. "Why don't you and Willemar see what you can do?"
She turned to Ayla.
"I'll watch Janayla, too, if you like." "She's almost asleep," Ayla said, indicating where she was to Marthona.
Tremida's children could use a few more floor mats, especially since they don't have enough sleeping rolls. When I left, Jandalar and Bolagan were finishing up the roof.
The three of them hurried toward the nearly completed small dwelling.